You and I back together again, chatting it up for a brand new week in the final day of March, March 31st, 2025 on Connecticut Today. Kicked it off letting you know about some ideas being raised at the state capitol to increase voter participation, including, believe it or not, the possibility of fining folks who just choose not to vote. CBS News White House reporter Olivia Rinaldi stopped by to chat about the fallout over that trip to Greenland last week by Vice President J.D. Vance. And CBS News auto industry correspondent Jeff Gilbert paid us a return visit detailing some of those upcoming Trump White House tariffs you may get hit with if you're shopping locally for a car. Landmark Legal Foundation attorney Mike O'Neill summed up U.S. Supreme Court oral arguments in a key case involving religious exemptions for Catholic groups.
You know, one thing I've been consistent about in the 30, 35 years or so, whatever it is, give a year here and there, that I've been doing, let's say 3 decades, that I've been doing talk shows here. No matter whether I've changed my thinking on other stuff or not, I've been consistent on this thing. Stop begging people to vote. Let's stop, honest to God, let's stop begging people to vote. If you're not engaged enough, if you're not committed enough, if you're not, dare I say, smart enough or have the brains to soak in issues and decide who you want to vote for, whether you want to vote, please, you and you and you over there, if you don't vote, if you don't care, I don't want to waste any of my time, the nation's time, the state's time at getting down on my rhetorical knees and begging you to vote. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of time. People who take voting seriously, of either major party, of any race, creed, sexual orientation, people who take it seriously, I guess they take it seriously. The only people who fret about people not voting are the people who are worried that their side's going to lose. And in Connecticut here, it's the progressive side, it's the Democratic side, because now we have stuff coming out of Hartford last week that legislators are looking to form a, here it is, task force on how to increase voting. And one of the things they're thinking about, now, I'll tell you, I don't think this will ever happen, but one of the things they're thinking about is mandatory voting. Now, obviously, this is coming from the majority side, the Democratic side in Hartford, because they saw Mr. Trump get a few more votes in this state than they were anticipating this time around. Their turnout in certain urban areas, Hartford is horrible. Bridgeport's a little better. New Haven, all in all, is not better. But when they see blue areas in times not coming out to vote, the majority in Hartford generally comes up with dingbat-like ideas. This story by Brandon Whiting, the Inside Investigator. The state's Government Administration and Elections Committee holding a public hearing on a bill that stipulates the creation of a task force to explore different ways the state could increase voter participation, including mandatory voting. Mandatory voting. I know it's likely not to happen, but what a dingbat moron idea that is. Quote, "The integrity of elections is important to everyone here," said Avery Gilbert, director of the, here we go, here's one for the business card, the Civil Rights Efficacy Clinic at Yale. However, and here it is, I'm telling you, this is why you read these quotes. And these quotes come in with, you know, oh my God, we can't let the Republicans win. However, by far, the greatest threat to the integrity of our elections is not the people who are voting, but those who are not. Please, my God, you people in the city, you black and Hispanic folks, you must vote more. All right, this gets better. Look... Am I wrong on this? Can we please stop begging people to vote? If you're not smart enough, if you don't have the brains, if you don't have the wherewithal, the commitment to say, yeah, I better vote here, or I need to learn more about an issue here, then you know what? I would prefer you sit on your keister and stay home. I would. I don't care if you're left or right or black or white, a conservative or liberal. I don't want to have to beg you to vote. How hard is this? Can you explain something to me? Talk or text here. 203-333-9422. 333-WICC. You get old enough, you learn about what's going on in your city or town, you register to vote, and then you go out and vote. It's not that hard. Get your head out of your phone, watch some news, and figure out what you're going to vote for and what you're not going to vote for. But are you in favor of, and we'll get into the list in a moment of what might be done here, but they're actually talking about monetary fines if you don't vote. I'm serious. Monetary fines if you don't vote. Are you kidding? Are you people out of your minds? Now, of course, this is coming from a couple of uber leftists at the Capitol, but they want to fine people if they don't vote. Yeah, meantime, how's all that push to lower our electric bills doing? So if I don't ever want to vote in an election here in Connecticut, or if you don't, or if you don't, or if you over there don't want to vote, or if your family doesn't want to vote, frankly, that's nobody's business. But again, the progressives, the leftists up in Hartford now are pushing again. They've done this before, too. We need to do this, that, and the other to increase voter turnout. Why? Explain that to me. Why do we need to increase voter turnout? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. I, frankly, for one, and it has nothing to do with my party affiliation or who I think should win elections or who doesn't or who I don't think should win. I never worry about turnout. Would I like it to see higher? To see it higher? Well, of course I would. Of course you want to see 100% participation, but man, it's nobody's business in Hartford as to why somebody doesn't vote. And how dare people even, you know, mildly suggest, I mean, how dare people mildly suggest that we have to do this, that, and the other to get to 100% voter participation? So again, they're looking to form a task force. And you know what a task force means? It would be years and years and years before anything happened. But let me give you a little of this, and you let me know. Are you for this stuff? 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas, State Rep Josh Elliott and Hamden both submitting testimony in support of the bill. The bill was supported by, and again, take a look at who supports this. The Connecticut AFL-CIO, 100% Democracy, the Service Employees United, SEIU, of Connecticut, the State Council. So it's progressive Democrats, it's big labor, because they don't like the fact that enough of their voter base comes out to vote. Now, I understand that. They want their voters to show up. But man, listen to this. They're talking about, well again, Miles Rappaport, who is a former Secretary of the State, big progressive, he said, well, we should look at countries like Australia. Now, get this. Rappaport said that typically countries use little to no penalties for the enforcement of mandatory voting, and making it law usually is not enough to dramatically raise participation. He said that Australia uses a light touch of enforcement. In Australia, if you don't vote, the government mails you a letter asking you why. If a non-voter ignores the first letter, they're mailed a second letter. And if they ignore the second, they're then fined $20. So Rappaport said, and you know what I do in Australia? I mail a letter back that says, F you. That's what I do. Rappaport said, so it's less than a parking ticket, but at the same time, it's enough so that it does serve as an incentive for people to do what they're required to do. No, Miles. No, Stunod. We're not required to vote in this state or in this country. My God, this is what the progressives in Hartford, the Democrats that get elected over and over again, this is what they waste their time on. Because they're paranoid that their voter base may be dwindling. Maybe, hey, they're taking a look at those Hispanic and black voters that voted for Trump. And they're a little worried about this. Rappaport, and here's the Pontius Pilate here. Patton Milford, hang on. Here's the Pontius Pilate routine, washing his hands. Rappaport clarified that while he does support some sort of enforcement, the bill does not call for such. And it would ultimately be up to the legislature to decide what enforcement, if any, would look like. Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas noted in her testimony that the absence of any proposed fines makes the bill a far more thoughtful and effective approach to increasing voter participation. How many years, how many decades have we been going around and around and around with this lunacy? Oh, my God, we have to increase voter participation. No, you don't have to do anything. If your voters are smart enough, they'll do it for you. If your voters are engaged and feel a responsibility and pay attention in school when this stuff is argued and taught, you don't have to do anything. So please, for the love of sweet Jesus, can we stop begging people to vote? If I have to beg somebody to vote, I don't want them voting. I don't. Even if they vote for my side on the bill, I don't. Stay home. Are you going to vote? I don't know. Good. Sit on your ass and stay home. But am I wrong on this? Should we continuously pester people to vote and even perish the thought, fine them $5, $10, $15, $20 if they don't vote? My God, this is what they're wasting their time with at the Capitol. Well, Paul, you know, civic engagement's important. Yeah, you don't have to tell me that, Einstein. Thanks. Hey, Pat leads us off in Milford. Pat, how are you? Hang on, Pat. I can't hear you. Thank you. Pat, what's up?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good, Pat. What's up?
Well, I would say the most important thing is to clean up all the fake votes first, because there's so many fake votes, I have no confidence in the whole system. And I know when I'm casting my vote, it's getting canceled out by a few fake ones at Bridgeport.
Yeah, but do we know that, Pat? See, here's the thing. We can't even get an investigation in that. We have no guarantees about the voter rolls being gone over. So, I mean, do we even know that?
Well, we don't, and they will never investigate it because it's not in their interest, because the fake votes are working for them right now. So, that's all. I have no confidence in the voter rolls, how they've rigged it, and you know, that's how they keep the same people in power.
All right, Pat, thank you. And you know what keeps the same people in power? People not voting, but I don't want to force them to vote. And lazy people, too. Let's face it, there are a lot of voters who they recognize the name, and that's it. They don't research tax policy. They don't research DOT policy. They don't research any of this stuff. They just don't, because they're lazy and they're uninformed, and I don't want to beg them to vote. Please, stop it. How about you try and lower our electric bills, huh? How about we do that? How about we lower some taxes in this state instead of every single freaking piece of legislation in this state looking to rub somebody's back and all go kumbaya? Joe in Madison. Joe, how are you?
I'm fine, Paul. How are you today?
I'm good, Joe. What's on your mind?
Well, you kind of stepped ahead of everyone here. The latest thing is the state did all this extended voting hours, and that's costing these towns and cities thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. Does anyone know what that number has come out to be?
I don't know what the exact number, Joe. Thank you for the call. And the point is, Joe, I'm glad you brought that up, because here we are wanting to do this and that with voting and everything. And the Secretary of the State and these state leaders are saying, wait a minute, you don't even give us enough money to handle the voting we have now. Look, here's the bottom line with all this. The majority in Hartford, they're paranoid. They're looking at trends. They see hardly anybody shows up in Hartford. It's below what it should be in Bridgeport and New Haven. And again, instead of really doing the people's work, like lowering taxes, lowering electric bills, they get wound up in all this stuff because, dear God, we don't want these people not voting for the same simps again. Joining us right now, though, from D.C., CBS News White House reporter Olivia Rinaldi on the continued fallout and head-scratching over that Greenland visit by VP J.D. Vance. Olivia, hi, it's Paul in Connecticut. How are you?
Hey, Paul. I'm good. How are you on this Monday?
Not too bad. New week. And I guess a lot of people, there's still a big blowback, Olivia, isn't there, from this visit by J.D. Vance, stuff that's being said by him and the president regarding, hey, Greenland, we have an offer for you. You probably shouldn't refuse it. What are you hearing there on this?
Well, it was quite the chilly reception on Friday for this visit that was once billed as the second lady going for, you know, a cultural visit. She was supposed to go to a dog sled race. Then it turned into the national security advisor, the vice president, the energy secretary, and a senator from Utah going on this delegation trip to Greenland, where they were uninvited. They did not meet with people of, you know, Greenland's government on the ground. Instead, they visited a U.S. military base that's about 750 miles south of the North Pole in the Arctic Circle.
Mm-hmm.
And up there, they met with U.S. service members, but they did not have any local delegations there greeting them on the ground. That's obviously quite notable when you're visiting another country.
Yeah.
The leader of Greenland before the visit said that specifically National Security Advisor Waltz's presence was one that showed the aggressive intent, really, of the Trump administration. The prime minister asked, what's the National Security Advisor doing in Greenland? The only purpose is to demonstrate power over us. And of course, you know, on Friday, we heard from the vice president there where he said, you know, this is something that is going to happen.
Yeah.
He said that this is something, it's just inevitable. It's got to happen. The control change of Greenland has to happen. He said the island itself is not safe and it's vulnerable. And that's the position of the administration, that these people will have self-determination. They will make this choice themselves, but the Trump administration is going to do what they can to convince them they're better off with the U.S. than they are with Denmark.
And Olivia, finally, I mean, I get the strategic importance, but is this, I don't want to say all for show, but are they getting intel saying, hey, it's just a matter of not if, but when China or Russia moves on Greenland? Is this why they've adopted that tone?
You know, Paul, I'm glad you asked that, because had I been on that trip, that's the question I would have asked the vice president. What have you seen specifically that is making this such an urgent matter? Because clearly we are not even 100 days into this administration, and the vice president on his second international trip is not going to, you know, Taiwan. He's not going to the Pacific. Mm. He's going to Greenland,
mm-hmm.
and that is quite telling of what they feel, how important they feel this really is. And you mentioned the security concerns of it. We know that the Arctic is melting, and because of that, it's giving Russian and Chinese submarines and ships greater access to waterways that are close to the United States that they did not have access to before. That is why Greenland is so strategic. That's why we need to have a bigger presence there. And we heard that, you know, Vice President Vance had been really telling the Europeans, step up, do more, because we're going to need you in this theater if something ends up happening. We heard that again from him on Friday, where he said that Greenland is just not doing enough. And he also laid out the strategic importance, where he said, God forbid, if missiles were fired from an enemy country or an enemy submarine, it is the people on the base in Greenland who would give notice to the brave men and women, the U.S. soldiers fighting down south. That's the importance of all of this. So we heard them really lay it out there in quite stark terms, I'll say. I've never heard them talk about it that starkly, but I am curious that there is some intelligence they are getting that is telling them how important this may be.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Olivia Rinaldi, CBS News. Olivia, thank you. Stay safe, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks. Appreciate
it. Thank you.
Thanks, Olivia. Thanks. You hear her on the network news, top of the hour here, and you see her on the CBS Evening News. So great that we have access to that. Yeah. So She and I as reporters, her with a national gig, of course, but me here. See, we all think the same thing.
Yeah, you may want to scoot out tonight or tomorrow at the latest if you want to avoid these tariffs on some autos in and about the area here. Fairfield County, New Haven County, Connecticut, joining us right now, a gentleman who's covered the auto industry for years for CBS News and WWJ Radio in Detroit. Jeff Gilbert's with us. Jeff, good afternoon. Are these tariffs now definitely on the way? There's not going to be a last-second reprieve here, might there be or not?
Well, I don't have a crystal ball. The president last week said there wouldn't be, so it seems at this point they're definitely on the way. Now, if I'm a car buyer, I would not suggest panic, but I would suggest prudence.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
It's not like your car's going to, you know, cost you $1,000 more the next day. It's going to take a while for these to factor in, so you don't have to rush out today.
And Jeff, also, not just the automobiles, but I know folks like you and the other people covering this have brought this up. A lot of it has to do with auto parts, too, correct?
Right, and let's not get confused when we say auto parts. We're not necessarily talking about the replacement parts you buy to replace the car.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about parts that car companies buy from suppliers,
yep,
because 70% of a car comes from a supplier and it's assembled, and those parts go across the border. They can actually cross the border a couple of times before they go into a vehicle.
And I guess people would be sometimes, Jeff, I always tell them, surprised to find out the international, and this is part of the problem here, the kind of the international mix, right, that goes on in delivering that new car to your local dealer lot here. It's not all American made, American put together, or American parts anymore, is it?
No, I mean, the parts are made in many countries. Mexico, of course, is a big country for manufacturing parts, but some are made in Canada, some are shipped in from other parts of the world. And also, when you're talking about well-known cars, some of them are made in Mexico or Canada. For example, the Chrysler Pacifica minivan is made across the river from us in Detroit,
sure,
and Windsor, Ontario. And if you take a look at the Chevy Blazer, it's made in Mexico.
And finally, Jeff, I know the UAW loves this, do they not? And all of a sudden, Sean Fain, to some extent, has a smile on his face. That's what we've been told.
He does. He definitely is not a Donald Trump fan. I mean, they had their exchanges during the campaign, but for years the UAW has wanted tariffs, has wanted anything that they could get to try to push manufacturing in the U.S. But you know, it also could be careful what you wish for, because if it slows down the U.S. auto industry, you could see layoffs at some of those auto plants.
Jeff Gilbert, WWJ in Detroit and CBS News. Jeff, thank you as always. Appreciate the time. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for the call.
All right, there you go. Jeff Gilbert, WWJ Radio in Detroit, has been covering you've heard him for years on CBS News, so how about that? And the thousands and thousands of Catholics all around this state and Catholic organizations may have an interest in this fascinating story. U.S. Supreme Court hearing a case that involves taxes and Catholic groups. Mike O'Neill, our friend from the Landmark Legal Foundation, joins us on All Things Supreme Court. Hey, Mike, it's Paul. How are you, sir?
I'm good, Paul. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Mike. Thanks for joining us here on short notice. But
always
I just
pleasure.
Saw this.
Oh,
yeah, thank you. The Supreme Court hearing arguments today on a religious exemption case or cases involving taxes. What's going on here?
Right. This is now we're getting towards the end of the Supreme Court's term here, so there's just a few cases left for oral arguments, and then we're going to start to get this bevy of opinions that we all like to watch and hear,
mm-hmm,
come May and June. But this case is called, this is Catholic Charities Bureau versus Wisconsin Labor and Industry Review Commission. And so what it involves is a group, Catholic Charities. Most people are familiar with,
mm-hmm,
Catholic Charities. They do a lot of work with people with disabilities, the poor, the needy. It's an offshoot, and it's an arm of the Catholic Church that engages in a lot of the social work that Catholics do, that they practice.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in Wisconsin is a Catholic Charities group in Wisconsin petitioned for a exemption for the state unemployment tax, so a benefit that was conveyed by the state of Wisconsin, which would exempt the Catholic Charities from paying that unemployment tax.
Yeah.
And It said that the employees were covered by a provision in the statute that says employment for anyone who works for an organization operated primarily for religious purposes. Hmm. And the Catholic Church said, well, that certainly is applicable to us. Well, the state of Wisconsin, the state labor commission, ruled that it wasn't, decided that it wasn't, because it said that Catholic Charities doesn't engage in a religious motivation, doesn't have religious motivations. Its activities are secular. In other words, helping the poor people and distributing the aid that Catholic Charities distributes and doing the service it does in favor of the people with disabilities is a secular activity. It's not necessarily a religious motivation. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court, of course, they appealed that decision within the state apparatus here. And the Wisconsin Supreme Court agreed with the Labor Commission, saying that the exemption was not available, it wasn't permissible, and that it said, in essentially what here you had is you had a state Supreme Court delving into what constitutes whether an organization is operated primarily for religious purposes. And the state Supreme Court, this is where it really got troublesome and where you kind of got off the rails today with oral arguments.
Yeah.
It said that the state Supreme Court said, look, the Catholic Charities doesn't attempt to imbue people who participate in its programs with the Catholic faith, nor it doesn't supply any religious materials to programs, participants, or employees. And that's kind of where it really, really got into problems today with oral arguments. The Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court, took up oral arguments today, and the justices were active in their usual manner, asking all sorts of questions. But kind of judges from both sides of the ideological spectrum, Justice Kagan and Justice Gorsuch, were really kind of saying, hey, look, should a state Supreme Court be determining whether attempt to imbue is a necessary predicate for qualifying for a valid religious purpose? Or so that's really where the problems kind of got off the rails for the state of Wisconsin. And it looked like you saw a significant majority of the court seemed to be sympathetic to the Catholic Church.
Interesting.
In this case.
Yeah. So, Mike, then Mike O'Neill, what would happen if they find, for example, in favor of Catholic Charities, that they don't have to participate in the unemployment tax thing? Could maybe a chapter of that here in Connecticut? Honestly, I don't know whether there is one. But are other chapters of Catholic Charities going to look at this case and say, hey, we're covered by this?
Well, and it's a great question, because I think each state is probably they very well might be already in Connecticut. I'm not familiar with it, but if there is such a provision, keep in mind you have to have a couple of things here. You have to have a state provision in law, and again, this mirrors a federal tax law. So you have to have a similar. We're talking about state unemployment taxes here.
Yeah.
And if you have to have a state law conveying that benefit to it, so the legislature has to say for religious organizations who want to apply for this exemption, charitable or religious organizations who want to apply for this, you can apply for this. And of course, it would have some bearing there. And I think, but on the broader aspect, really touching on your broader point here, is the reiteration from a significant majority of the court that you shouldn't have courts deciding whether what constitutes a religious religious test here, setting a religious test. Because keep in mind, remember, our Constitution protects religious freedom and doesn't want prevents discrimination on the basis of religious beliefs. And so really, practically speaking, we're talking about this, Paul, is what if a valid religion, a recognized religion says, well, it's part of our religious beliefs that we don't attempt to imbue people. And so setting that standard, unless you attempt to imbue your religion on people who come through your door in Catholic Charities, then you're not really functioning as true to a religious test. You're not passing the religious test. And the court kind of said that that's really the discriminatory manner, because you're picking and choosing what constitutes a valid religious practice, and that's a little discriminatory. And the court said that, I think the court's leaning toward that being considered a discriminatory.
Interesting. Great stuff as always. Mike O'Neill, Landmark Legal Foundation. Look him up online. Mike, thanks. Appreciate it. Be good, and we'll chat down the road.
Yeah, well, I'm sure we'll talk soon.
Take care. Thank you, Mike. Appreciate it. Yeah, so there you have it.